The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
בני שבת נקבלה לחד עודי לקראת קהלה.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. We are in Shloshes Yemei Hagbala, which means we're 3 days before Shavuos, and we're allowed to listen to regular music. The mourning period is over, according to all opinions. So, yes, we get to celebrate with lots of music this hour. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be talking to Detroit's own sofer, scribe, Rabbi Levi Kagan, who will tell us about the ins and outs and the importances of writing a Torah scroll, since the holiday of Shavuos, the giving of the Torah, is this Tuesday night. Speaking of which, that's what's our, in the second half of the hour, we will be talking about the holiday of Shavuos. We've got an awesome Hasidic story at the end, the very end of the show. So stay tuned right to the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Security forces in Ariel prevented a suicide bombing when they noticed a man wearing a heavy coat in the hot sun. Police ordered the man to drop and take off his coat. He was found wearing a bomb belt. The terrorist confessed to being part of a larger cell in Samaria. Police are now looking for other members of the cell. IDF forces were attacked during an arrest operation in Jenin. Rocks and explosives were thrown at the soldiers. 7 wanted terrorists plus 1 rock thrower were arrested. Similar news, border guards arrested 9 terrorists in villages east of Jerusalem. The men were wanted for throwing Molotov cocktails at soldiers. Former New York City police officer Michael Tawan was arraigned on 39 counts of criminal mischief as a hate crime for his anti-Semitic graffiti spree in Borough Park, Brooklyn, earlier this month, as was reported on the Jewish Hour. Syrian soldiers destroyed the Eliyahu HaNavi Synagogue in Damascus. The building is over 400 years old and contains thousands of irreplaceable Jewish artifacts. I'm wondering why were they still there, because there's no Jews in Syria. But anyway, vandals broke into the Jewish cemetery in the northern Greek city of Thessalonica, causing minor damage. The incident comes after the release of a survey showing that Greece has Europe's highest rate of anti-Semitism, with 69% of Greeks having anti-Semitic views, nearly twice the rate of the next highest country, France, where the rate is only 37%, but where they get 2,000 acts of anti-Semitism every year. 21st runway, some good news, a 21st runway has been opened at Ben-Gurion Airport this week. The new runway means that more planes can land and take off from Israel. Under the open skies policy started last year, more planes from Europe are allowed to land in Israel, causing the price of a ticket to fall. Israeli President Shimon Peres and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas will join Pope Francis in a prayer for peace at the Vatican on June 8th. The Pope made the invitation following a celebration of Mass in the Manger Square in Bethlehem during his visit last week to the Palestinian city. I'll take that back, to the Israeli city. A rabbi and an imam will be present at the service. And finally, Israeli doctors successfully transplanted a piece of a mother's liver into the body of her 7-month-old infant. Doctors at the operation saved the infant's life. A day later, the infant was awake and in critical but stable condition. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herr Schulzenman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Rabbi Levi Kagan, Detroit's own Sofer His Scribe Extraordinaire. How are you today, Levi?
Baruch Hashem, very good.
Thank you so much for taking some of your busy time off on this free Shavuos time. I know everything's busy, busy, busy.
My pleasure. The writing was going very well today. Maybe it's in your honor of the audience.
Oh, well, okay, whatever works, as they say. I want to talk about the intricacies of writing a Torah, since the holiday of Shavuos, which is coming up this week, commemorates the giving of the Torah, and we'll talk about the makings of a Torah, the sanctity of it, and all that. Let's start first off by, what does it take to be a scribe? Do you have to be, like, artistic, Levi Kagan?
Actually, interesting. It seems you don't have to be artistic. You don't even have to have a good handwriting. A friend of mine has terrible handwriting. He's not artistic, and surprise. I mean, he's a better sofer than me. I think it's just the discipline, because if you're practicing to write those letters, you know, the same style. You're not. It's not like artistic. You're doing the same style the whole time, again and again. If you practice enough, discipline enough, you know, it'll become very uniform, and, you know, you'll be able to do it. It does help to be artistic. Many scribes are artistic, but it's not necessary. You know, not necessarily. You know, if enough discipline, you could do it pretty well without any talent.
Okay, what are the qualifications to be a sofer, a scribe, Levi Kagan?
First of all, I would say, you know, you have to be someone that takes the Torah laws very seriously, because you have a lot of laws regarding writing. We have to follow a whole list of laws and pertaining to each letter, how to write it, what to even think while we're writing it. So it has to be someone who takes all these things generally in his life very seriously, all the Torah laws very seriously. Then, you know, you could trust he'll take these laws seriously as well. I would say that's the first thing.
So when choosing a scribe, we should choose somebody who we believe to be, so as the expression, a God-fearing Jew, I guess.
Right, exactly.
Okay, that's just, that's prerequisite number one. That's even before we even start thinking about the guy becoming a scribe.
Right, number one for sure. And because that's something that no one could tell later. If you look at a scroll, you don't know if the person had the right intentions. You could see if it's a nice handwriting. So that, you know, that's a no-brainer, but no one knows what he's thinking. So that, right, like you say, that's the first thing. After that, someone, you know, you have to be disciplined enough to sit for a few hours. You know, personally, I'm not that disciplined. I write for a few hours, and then it's enough for the day. I usually spend the afternoon doing something easier, like repairing already written scrolls to make sure that, you know, just restoring them, cracked letters and Torahs. Something easier. It's quite strenuous to write. You're writing freehand. There's wet ink. You know, a lot of mistakes could happen, and sometimes it costs you the whole scroll. Not the whole Torah scroll. The Torah is the easier rules, but I'm writing currently Tefillin, and sometimes a mistake costs me, you know, a day's work. So it's quite strenuous. You don't become rich from it, but it's very rewarding. And
okay,
about
well,
it.
Okay, no problems then. So how long does it take the average person? If the person decides, okay, today I'm deciding I would like to be a scribe. So how long does a normal course of study take? And then what's involved once I say, hey, I think I know enough to be a scribe?
Right. It's not really that much learning. It's in the code of law, Jewish law. There's a few chapters that you have to know well. There's one pertaining to writing. Not a lot of learning. You could do it in a few months. It's not like a few years of college.
Does that include also the technique of writing with 27 letters?
Right. So, well, the code of law gives you the shape of the letters, but you do have to apprentice because there's only that much you could learn from a book, so you have to apprentice. It's not a big apprenticing either. I would say the thing that takes the longest is getting yourself, your handwriting to be really uniform and nice. You know, that sometimes could take a year, could take years for until a scribe is really happy with his handwriting. But he could already work after a few months, of training, but his stuff won't sell for that much. It won't be so nice. You know, he'll have to practice.
Okay, so now we're talking about the Torah scroll. The Torah scroll is viewed as the holiest object in Judaism. What is it, Rabbi Levi Kagan, that makes an object like a Torah scroll holy?
I would say number one has God's name. It's written out the way Yud Kei Vav Kei. I don't know what's the name for that in English. But it's written, you know, God's name written out the full way, the way we don't even pronounce it that way when we pray. So, but we do write it out that way in the Torah. So that's number one. The law just has special rules just for a Torah, just because it's the Torah. It's the entire five books of Moses, and there's special laws how you treat a Torah, where you put it. You can't just travel with it. You can't take it where you want. There's law, you know, all these laws. If it falls, you have to fast. And I think it's just because it's the Torah, even if it wouldn't have God's name, but the fact is, you know, it has God's name.
Okay, let's talk about that, some of those laws. What, because it's a holy object, I mean, so we hear this thing, you know, people generally don't have, like, say, holy objects in their house, per se. What are the restrictions involving having a Torah scroll? First of all, could anybody go buy a Torah scroll and keep them in the living room? Aside the fact that they cost a lot of money.
Right. I would think, I'm not 100% sure, but based on, I'm comparing to some other things that I just saw, there's a law, you can't bring the Torah to read it, if someone's sick, he couldn't go to the synagogue, you can't bring the Torah to his house just to read it once. You know, maybe if you keep it there for a while, read a few times, you could bring it to him, or if he's a very special person, maybe. But generally, you can't just bring it to his house. But then if you do set up an ark for it, then you could bring it to his house.
An ark being, I'm thinking boat, like Noah and animals.
Oh, no, what is it? You know, special box, specially the kinds they have in the synagogue.
Like a cabinet type of thing, yes.
Right, right. So I would say maybe, you know, if you want to have it in your house, if you do set up that type of, whatever you call it, ark or, you know, special place for it, then I think you could have it in your house. You know, maybe you, I would think also whatever in that room, you should designate that a room which you're going to only do respectful things in that room. Like I know in a synagogue, we can't just make a party in front of the ark unless we cover the ark with the extra covering. So I would say the same thing in the house.
Okay. So you mentioned something about it falling on the floor?
Yes. So falling on the floor. Now, some of you listeners might be saying, yeah, we heard about that. Falls on the floor, you have to fast for 40 days. That's a myth that I don't know. We can't get rid of it. Everyone knows about it, but there's no such thing. You do have to fast, though.
So you don't have to fast 40 fasts, but you do have to
40,
fast.
Not 40, but you have to fast. If you see the Torah falling on the floor, whoever saw it on the floor has to fast for a day. You could choose any day and fast.
Considering that it's sort of like a real sorrowful thing if a Torah scroll even winds up on the floor. Understood. Okay, so let's go to the procedure of writing a Torah, all the difficulties and intricacies thereof. Somebody commissions you, Rabbi Levi Kagan from Detroit. They have a somebody for some reason. Why would somebody commission somebody to write a Torah, first of all?
Right. So that's an interesting question. There's enough scrolls already. The thing is, there is a mitzvah for every Jew to write himself a Torah scroll. Okay, now that's the first question. Well, how could they make a mitzvah? Everyone should write a Torah scroll. Not everyone's a scribe. So there's a lot of buts, you know, but you don't have to write it yourself. You could commission someone to write it for you. Or, you know, well, like we said, it's a lot of money. Let's say for a nice scroll, it's $30,000-$40,000. You can't afford it. So you could participate. You could pay a little bit into a Torah that's being written, and you could take a, you know, pay for one letter to be written, you know, in your honor or something like that.
Okay, so you've been commissioned. Somebody, Joe Person has, or Yossi Person, as the case may be, has commissioned Rabbi Levi Kagan to write a Torah scroll. Okay, describe the procedure. What do you do now?
Okay, so first thing is I have to find a good place to get the parchment papers from.
Okay, you said parchment paper. This is not paper, though.
Right, not paper. Parchment's called parchment paper. Well, animal parchment, animal Torah parchment. So both. It has to be from a kosher animal.
Uh-huh. Sheep, generally?
Sorry?
Sheep, generally? Sheepskin?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that, like smaller animals, generally. It has to be a kosher animal, and it has to be processed in a place that processes it especially for Torahs. So you can't just pick it up in the tannery.
Mm-hmm. I can't go into, say, like Michael's art store,
right,
or what am I thinking of? Office Max, and say, I need some parchment, please.
No, you can't do that. I don't think they would give it to you anyway. I don't think they have it. But even if they would, you can't do that. They're not cheap. It's like, let's see, I think 40 or 50 such papers to make up a Torah, and each one costs you maybe around $100.
So just in
the, already, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 just for the
initial things. Okay. Right. So you have this parchment. Let's say you wanted to, you weren't so sure about the authenticity of it and whatnot. You wanted to make your own parchment. What would be entailed with that, Levi Kagan?
Okay.
You need a lot
of
sheep, first
I've
of all.
I've seen people that make it. One of my teachers makes his own parchment in Brooklyn, Crown Heights. So, just basically, you get the skins. You get them from anywhere, maybe a slaughterhouse. Okay, you get them salted usually, so they stay fresh. The main thing is putting them into chemicals, strong chemicals, something like lime. I'm not sure what they are, but soaking them in the chemicals for a couple of weeks. So that's once you've done that, then you've done most of the work. After that, it's taking it out of the chemicals. Of course, we put it in the chemicals. Of course, I have to say I'm doing this for the mitzvah of writing a Torah. Once I take it out of the chemicals, the hair will already mostly fall off of it. It's already on the way. So we stretch it up on a frame to dry, and then scrape off some of the fats, the dirt, sand it, let it dry, let it dry first, then sand it, and that's it. You're ready to write.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said when you begin soaking it, you mentioned that I'm doing this for the purpose of a Torah scroll. Does it take out a sanctity at that point? I'm saying that, for example, when we think, say, in Judaism, we say something is holy, it doesn't get thrown away, it gets buried if it can't be used. Would you have to bury it at that point?
Well, what we do is we make a condition that anything we're not going to use is going to go back. It's going to lose its holiness because we don't want to have to be responsible for
burying all that stuff. Okay, yeah, so now, yeah. then tell us about the ink is also something which is you're not using a Sharpie.
We're not using a Sharpie, but actually interesting about the ink is that's the only part in the whole process of the Torah that does not have to be made special for a Torah. You could go into Michael's and get Indian ink and use it. Although you'll have a better product if you'll pick up something that's made for a Torah. They make in Israel all kind of companies that make ink for Torah writing. But you could pick one up in Michael's.
Anything special about the Torah ink per se?
Torah versus
Parker ink.
Oh, it's a thick ink. It's like an Indian ink. It's thick. It's very dark black, That's basically what it is. We dip our feather in it. So
obviously indelible. And there's a discussion in the Talmud about putting something into the ink called kankatum, which is translated as vitriol, which I don't even know what that is in English, what vitriol is. So are they still following some sort of an ancient method of mixing what is it, magnesium sulfate and those types of stuff?
Okay, so, yeah.
You gall know, nuts and these things.
That. I just pick up the battle, and I don't know what goes into it.
Okay, fair enough. Now you mentioned the word quill. Why you can't use a pen?
Traditionally, not. I mean, it'll still be kosher. Some things we do, but if we fail to do it, it's still kosher. So this, you know, you could if you end up using a Sharpie with Indian ink or something, or a fountain pen, it'll be kosher. But the tradition is we use actually a feather from a kosher bird. That's what all scribes use.
Like a goose quill or a turkey quill.
Goose or turkey. I should say, with the exception of Yemenites, have a tradition to use what is it called, a bamboo stick to write.
A bamboo stick specifically. So they're not using quills. So interesting. Yeah. Kind of thinking. Do you think like you're like Benjamin Franklin? If you know that, you know, we're writing there with a quill all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a throwback to the 1700s.
What's his name? That the new movie. No, I forget the name. He writes with a feather.
Okay. I don't
whatever.
Know. I don't know what movie you're referring to, so...
Yeah, you know the kid, whatever. It skips my mind anyway.
Okay. So I hear that. So you're using a quill. This is all, like, it's all very ancient. Sounds like nothing's really changed in 3,000 years, per se,
right,
in the making of a Torah. And the most fascinating thing is you have... Okay, so you've got like 40 sheets of writing. How do you connect them?
Okay. So here again, this has to be made special. So we have special thread made of what are they called? Veins of a kosher animal.
Veins. You're talking like veins, nerves, this type of stuff.
Veins. Yeah, they crush the veins and they shred, you know, shred it and spin it and make nice thread out of it.
So it's not like cat gut, and you should pardon the expression, used in making
it's clean,
a
it's nice. It looks like fishing line almost. And but it's from a kosher animal, and that's what we have to use that for it to be kosher.
Where is this all mandated that it be done like this? And is there a reason why?
Right, the reasons we don't have too many, but the source is very interesting. That although all parts of the Torah originate from Moses, but a lot of things Moses learned, but we don't know if he taught it or someone else figured it out later. But there's certain laws that we have a tradition that Moses taught his pupil, and then it was passed on from person to person. And the details of how to write a Torah and how to make tefillin and mezuzah for that case, we have a tradition for all those details that they've all been passed down straight from God, from Sinai to Moses, all the details called halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. And that's very fascinating. That's why we're very careful. You know, we can't play around with those laws because they're, you know, direct. We don't play around with any laws, but these are special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is all very, very fascinating. And I forgot the question I was just going to ask. I'm sorry. I forgot the question when I was just going to ask you.
Sure.
So when you're writing it, and you said there's certain things that you have to think about when you're writing each letter, could you share with us some of the you're engaged in thought control over here.
We're not that, nowadays we can't control our mind that well, at least I can't, I don't know. Our mind could drift off in the middle, but in the beginning, when we start writing the Torah, we do have to know and say that I'm about to write a Torah. We have to be, of course, aware the whole time that we're writing the Torah. Now, in the middle, we start thinking that our stomach starts grumbling. We start thinking about lunch or tomorrow's appointment. It's not the end of the world, except when we're writing God's name. Write God's name, then you have to stop everything, all your thoughts, and again, you have to reconcentrate. And we say, actually, we're supposed to say it. I'm about to write this for the holiness of God's name, and then we go ahead and then keep our concentration at least for writing that word, for writing God's name, and then we drift off a little. Okay, you know, not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We have to say generally know what we're doing, but we don't have to be totally focused.
Uh-huh. What happens if, say, for example, that you're writing along, cruising along, and you just realize that the God's four-letter name, you just wrote it and went, oh, that was God's name that I just wrote.
Okay, that's a major problem. What you have to do in that case is very interesting. You can't erase. Usually, if we made a mistake or we forgot to think the right thing, we could scratch off the letter, sand off the letter, however we do it, because it's permanent ink. In this case, we can't, because there's a rule that you don't erase God's name, so we can't do that. So what we have to do is you have to cut out the name that you just wrote and put in a special box, with the Seamus. And then so that you have to cut that out, and then you put a patch in the back.
It's a whole procedure.
Unless you find a professional. A professional, they know how to slice this top layer of the parchment off. So they'll slice off God's name, and you still have another layer to write on. We can't use the. If you didn't realize you're writing God's name, then it's worthless.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And only you would know that.
Sorry?
And only you would know that. If I looked at that piece of parchment with the handwriting on it, I'd say, hey, that looks really perfect, Rabbi Kagan.
Right, exactly. Right. It goes back to that first point.
The first statement, indeed. What about the authenticity, the letter-for-letter accuracy, Rabbi Kagan?
Oh, that's very interesting. You know, every single Torah, since Torah's, we have a Torah from 2,000 years ago, and every Torah, anywhere you'll find them in the world, they all have the same amount of letters, 304,805. You know, maybe there's an opinion somewhere which changes one letter. I know the word daka, some people write it with an aleph, some write it with a hey. It means the same thing, but besides that one letter, it's the only difference I know. Besides, I know every single Torah. So, you know, we copy it from a previous Torah or a special book made to copy from. And that way, it's amazing that every Torah in the world—I mean, any synagogue you go to anywhere in the world, anywhere in history—it's you're reading the exact same thing. And not only that, but the font is also exactly the same. They found the Dead Sea Scrolls, and they said they were amazed that the font on the Dead Sea Scrolls 2,000 years ago is the exact same font as we're writing with today. So yeah. Not only the letters are the same, but the font is even the same for 2,000 years. I mean, it's just amazing.
Incredible. So the Torahs that we have, we can pretty much be assured that's exactly the same five books of Moses that Moses made.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exactly the same to the letter.
Mm-hmm.
The spelling and everything.
Terrific. This is really, 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 really fascinating. If anybody wants to get in touch with you about a Torah, or there's also the other things, is the mezuzah parchments, which go on the doorposts, as it says, you should write them on your doorposts, or if a tefillin, you should put them on a sign on your hand, and then frontlets between your eyes. And how do we get in touch with you, Rabbi Kagan?
Old-fashioned phone. What's it called? Ground phone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 248-968-7014.
Okay, I want to thank you so much, Rabbi Levi Kagan, who is Detroit's own sofer extraordinaire, and wish you continued success.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968. MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Shulman, here you are listening to The Jewish Hour. Rabbi Kagan, by the way, is available for your school or whatever to do a presentation on how he makes all of these things. Torahs, tefillin, mezuzahs, has a whole, he has a huge board of mezuzah scrolls that were written improperly. And he tells why each one was written improperly and how the person has to be really careful in getting their holy items from a scrupulous individual. And again, if you'd like Rabbi Kagan to come talk to your group, you can call him at 248-968-7014. I use Rabbi Kagan for all my scribal needs. We have this song. We're allowed to play regular music. This actually happens to be one of those souped-up a cappella songs that sounds like the guys are playing music, but he's actually just doing weird things with his mouth. This is Barry Weber. He actually came out with this song last week, and it's really good, and that's why I'm playing it, even though we could play. I didn't want to save it for the 3 weeks, which is in July. It's called Chabad a cappella, which is a Chabad song, Chabad Niggin sung a cappella, and this is Barry Weber, and it's for the girls from Chicago. They asked me to play it. Of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Herr Schulfenman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Let's do a public service announcement. Today, I usually like a little advance more notice, but it is an ongoing thing. But today at 3 p.m. at the Holocaust Memorial in Orchard Lake in Farmington Hills, Martin Mandelsberg has an exhibit of artwork, the Holocaust Portfolio. And the nuance of his thing is he has taken Holocaust pictures and imposed Hebrew writing, Hebrew letters on it. And he will be discussing this today at 3 p.m. And kosher refreshments will be served. And the art will remain on display until August 24th. And that's today at 3 o'clock at the Holocaust Memorial in Farmington Hills. Your organization having a something? Send me an information about it on rabbifinman.com. And we love doing it. After all, it is a public service announcement, and we are publicly serviceable radio show. We do it just for you. Speaking of just for you, a woman who wished not to be identified by name, but who lives in Hechtman Hall, which is up in the JCC campus, West Bloomfield over there, is assisted living, of sorts, or independent living, I'm not sure which one is which, requested, this is unusual, she requested this, and I had to dig deep into the depths of the Jewish Hour archives to come up with 1934. This is The Bridegroom Swing, and it's just for her.
Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herr Schulfenman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Laser Lloyd, who is touted as Israel's greatest blues singer, We'll be coming to Detroit sometime in October. So just to get you pre-interested, not to get you interested, but to get you pre-interested in possibly going to hear Laser Lloyd, this is Ha'am Sheli, My People.
Ha'am Sheli, Chi Gadol, Chi Katan, Ha'am Sheli, Chi Chadash, Chi Yishan, Ha'am Sheli, Chi Sover, Chi Savlan, Ha'am Sheli. Ha'am Sheli,
Ha'am Sheli, Amale be'ahava, Ha'am Sheli, Am shel lev u'neshama, Ha'am Sheli, Be'met. I'm segura, I'm sheli, ze am sheli, am sheli, ani ohev kol echad, am sheli, lo lefached ata, lo levad.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Just in case you were wondering, the portion of the week is Bahalosecha, and it is found in chapter 8 and following in the book of Numbers. But we're not going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the upcoming holiday of Shavuos. Shavuos is this Tuesday evening and continues on until Thursday evening. So for those who adhere to holiday observance, it's a very short week when you take 2 days right out of the middle. And for those of us who have to do whatever we have to do, so my Sunday, Monday, and Friday this week are really busy. So as I cram Wednesday and Thursday into those other days. It's a yontif and a holiday. And as far as Jewish holidays go, has received the least amount of publicity involved. But it's the most important one. And I already know, it's my line is, if you ask any rabbi, what's the most important holiday? They'll tell you whatever holiday is coming up next. And I'm ascribed to that philosophy as well. But if it were not for Shavuos, meaning the giving of the Torah to the Jewish people on Sinai, we wouldn't have a Torah. We wouldn't have Jewish holidays. We wouldn't have Judaism. So indeed, this is the most important holiday. So the question then comes up, if it's such an important holiday, why doesn't it get publicity? Why doesn't it get something like a Seder and 8 and 7 days, or sitting in a sukkah and shaking a lulav and getting 8 days, or dancing around with the Torah? We don't even dance around with the Torah. We would save that for after Sukkot. So you don't even get that. The question then is why? So there's a two-part component with the giving of the Torah. It's talked about that the giving of the Torah on Sinai was accompanied by great fanfare. It says there was thunder and lightning, and the mountain was on fire, and it was a total sensory overload for all the participants, and it was a big ta-da-dum. And it was, never mind earth-shaking, it was earth-changing. The world, the physics of the world changed with the giving of the Torah on Sinai. We've talked about that before. But what happened? 40 days later, they had the golden calf. One commentary actually ascribes that the reason why the Jewish people could get involved with making a golden calf, which violates commandment number 2, don't make any graven images, is because people took note of the external trappings and sort of forgot about, well, what's this all about? You know, I hear people complaining from other religions as to the holiday, which is normally observed towards the end of the year, and how it's become this major buying thing, and the religiosity and the sanctity of the holiday is gone, and the holiday that happens around Passover is become just an occasion to sit down and chow down, and with no sense of spirituality there. So what we want to do, with the holiday of Shavuos is we want to emphasize the spirituality. And to do that, what do? We sit and we learn Torah. God gave us the Torah, so to show the Almighty that even after 3,327 years, it's not like the old toy that gets thrown under the bed or into a closet or into the bottom of a toy box or some other tchotchkele, if you know that expression, that sort of loses its luster as time goes on. No. We're admonished. We have HaTorah Kachadashim. Every single day, the Torah has to be like a new thing. And here it is. We have an exercise in newness, you might say, as our having gotten the Torah. And we stay up all night. We're told the reason why we stay up all night is because the Jewish people went to sleep on the night of Shavuos, hoping to achieve some sort of higher spiritual level. And the Almighty had to wake them up, and because we're embarrassed for them. But if you look, the seventh day of Passover, when the Jews were up all night crossing the Red Sea, so people also stay up all night to remind us that they stayed up all night. So if they went to sleep, we stay up all night. If they stay up all night, we stay up all night. So bottom line, let's get down to the real down to it. The staying up at night is to show our dedication to the newness of the Torah, not necessarily to the Torah. That we do every single morning. We wake up and we go and we do whatever we do. What we're doing on Shavuos is showing the Almighty our enthusiasm, our newness. And indeed, I was recently in Philadelphia with my daughter, who is currently, among all the other things that she is doing, is attending university. And we were at this function, and there were a lot of her friends there. And I heard her speaking that, yes, on Shavuos, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to start at 11 o'clock, and we're going to go to this synagogue. And we're going to sit there for an hour, and we'll listen to this rabbi, and he's going to explain about this and this. And then we're going to move. We're going to go to another synagogue. And that rabbi is going to, it's a group of about 30 college girls. And these are not girls, I always use part of the expression, Beis Yaakov girls. These are not girls who were raised religious and understood the importance of learning Torah. These are college girls, regular co-eds, I don't know if they still use that expression, who were getting excited that they're going to do this party thing. What's their party thing going to be? It's not an all-night film festival, it's an all-night Torah fest. Yes! And these people were really excited about it. And I was just, to tell you the truth, I was very impressed with my daughter. I was blown away just at the concept, because that's what Shavuos is really all about. So, okay, it doesn't have the pomp, the circumstance, the fanfare, but that would just take away from this, because on Shavuos, it's not the grand tadadam. It's me. It's the Torah. It's God. The Zohar says that the Jewish people are connected to God through the Torah. And if you've got a faulty connection, I'll tell you a quick story. I have DSL for my internet access through our local telephone company provider. And being that my provider doesn't pay for advertising, I'm not going to say who it is. And suddenly I noticed that my internet is going very slow. But it's still going. And then suddenly my phone stopped working. So I put in a claim, and 2 weeks later, they finally came around. And I saw the guy and I said, "What gives?" And he said, "Well, squirrels kind of chewed through part of the wire." So here he says, I was connected. There was a connection there, but the connection was very slow. And I was connected, but this is what Shavuos is all about, making that connection and keeping it strong. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We unfortunately are out of time, and whenever I'm out of time and I don't get a chance to do the Hasidic story, well, one of two things happens. Either I put it on my e-parsha, which you'll find at www.rabbifinman.com, or in this case, since I've already done the e-parsha and posted it for this week, you can go to rabbifinman.com and see it there on the e-parsha page. So maybe I'll just tell it next week. But in the meantime, thank you so much for tuning in. We want to remind you to go to the e-parsha, check it out. Check out the www.rabbifinman.com. Check out the donations page. We need those. Send your donations to 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Have a good week. Have a happy Shavuos. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. And we'll see you again next week. Take care.